Welcome back to the podcast. It's been a strange year, hasn't it? I'm recording this in 2021, and we're still not at the end of the current worldwide pandemic. People have been searching for comfort in all sorts of places, whether that's in family, in medicine, or in simply having more stuff. Where are Christians meant to find comfort? Well, over the next few weeks, we're going to be playing some sermons I've been giving from the book of Isaiah. This book is foundational to the New Testament, and the New Testament authors seem to say that their message is in line with it. So we're going to see what it says, and we'll see where God calls us to find comfort too. Isaiah chapter 50, verse 4 to 11. The sovereign Lord has given me a well-instructed tongue to know the word that sustains the weary. He wakens me morning by morning, wakens my ear to listen like one being instructed. The sovereign Lord has opened my ears. I have not been rebellious. I have not turned away. I offered my back to those who beat me, my cheeks to those who pulled out my beard. I did not hide my face from mocking and spitting. Because the sovereign Lord helps me, I will not be disgraced. Therefore, I have set my face like flint, and I know I will not be put to shame. He who vindicates me is near. Who then will bring charges against me? Let us face each other. Who is my accuser? Let them confront me. It is the sovereign Lord who helps me. Who will condemn me? They will all wear out like a garment. The moths will eat them up. Who among you fears the Lord and obeys the word of his servant? Let the one who walks in the dark, who has no light, trust in the name of the Lord and rely on their God. But now, all you who light fires and provide yourself with flaming torches, go walk in the light of your fires and of the torches you have set ablaze. This is what you shall receive from my hand. You will lie down in torment. Why is the servant good news for a hopeless people? Why is the servant here in Isaiah chapter 50 good news for a hopeless people? Well, I wonder where you turn when things seem hopeless. We were thinking about that last week, weren't we? Where do we turn when things seem hopeless? When things seem dark and the worries of the world, they just crowd in. Where do we turn? It's easy, isn't it, to turn in on yourself, to start thinking, well, it's me versus the world, to talk to yourself, to keep yourself going, to listen to those voices inside your head and ignore everything else that is out there. Sometimes we live as if our ears are on the inside of our heads rather than on the outside. We spend more time listening to our thoughts that are inside rather than the voices outside. Well, one character that is famous for doing this, we had Eeyore last week, this week is Charlie Brown. He's the owner of Snoopy, if you don't know. Now, Charlie Brown, he looks at situations and he decides they are hopeless. And then, after the fact, after the thing has happened, he looks back and he thinks, yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Whether that's from having the ball taken away from him one more time as he tries to kick it, whether that's his dog not showing him any affection again, or whether it's the lemonade stand running out before he gets any. That's what he does. Well, we saw in Isaiah 49, God's people consigning themselves to abandonment. God has forgotten us. God's given up on us. And most drastically, God simply can't do anything about this. Those were desperately sad words that God, through Isaiah, dispelled. The issue wasn't with him. The issue is with them. But rather than letting them wallow in their thoughts like Charlie Brown, God answered and said, those things just aren't true. There's a difference between saying something, though, and doing something, isn't there? And that's exactly what God does. He tells us now what he's going to do. What action is God going to take? How is God going to deal with the issue? Well, this is where the servant comes back in. Just have a look at verse 10, just so I can prove to you that we are looking at the servant. Who among you fears the Lord and obeys the word of his servant? So everything before verse 10 that we're looking at this evening is the servant speaking, okay? Now, we've met this servant before, but this evening we're going to see him in more clarity. Isaiah, he likes to go around topics from multiple angles. He's like those Dolby surround sound speakers, you know what I mean? 7.1 sound or Dolby Atmos now. Each speaker is playing the same song by playing something different. Each speaker plays the same song, but they're playing something slightly different. By combining those sounds together, you get the masterpiece. I'm sure there's other people in the room who can be a bit more in detail about that than me. But that's what Isaiah is doing here with the servant, as he goes around the idea again and again. So this evening, we want to be asking, what is Isaiah adding to our understanding tonight? Or why is the servant good news for hopeless people? Well, the answer is, to that question, because the servant is everything the people should be. The servant is everything that people should be. So as I read through the passage earlier, you might have noticed the differences between the servant and the people last week. In fact, Isaiah is setting up the servant to be a direct contrast to the people beforehand. And the distinction between the people and the servant here, well, it's become a gulf. If you remember, this servant is Israel, but he's going to save Israel. This servant is everything that Israel is meant to be. And this servant, because of that, can save Israel. Let's have a look what that means, shall we? Well, first of all, the servant listens. Have a look at verse 4. The sovereign Lord has given me a well-instructed tongue to know the word that sustains the weary. He wakens me morning by morning, wakens my ear to listen like one being instructed. Do you see the emphasis there on the servant listening? The servant is the perfect disciple. The sovereign Lord has given him a well-instructed tongue. That is the tongue of a learner. If you remember a couple of Sundays ago, we saw the servant's mouth was his hidden weapon. He was the 007 style agent. He was going to be fighting a war with words. And those words were the words of God, words that the servant has heard, words that the servant has listened to. He wakens me morning by morning, wakens my ear to listen like one being instructed. See, all day long, the servant is listening to God. Just think how that contrasts with what we've seen of Israel. Israel, throughout this section of Isaiah, their big issue is that they are not listening to God. They don't learn from what God says. But did you see, did you spot what the servant does with those words in Isaiah 50? We've thought previously, haven't we, about what those words will do to those against God. But here, these words are fulfilling a different task. Just have a look again at the verse. The sovereign Lord has given me a well-instructed tongue to know the word that sustains the weary. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you've been trying to help someone who is depressed, help someone who is struggling. If you have, well, you know what it is like to look for words to sustain them. In fact, in quite a lot of situations, it's better just to stay silent, isn't it? But the servant here has the words, God's words, and as he speaks them, they sustain the weary. Then we know sometimes that verse that just gets sent by a friend to us is exactly what we need in that situation. In context, the weary are those who are in exile. God's word is what's going to sustain God's faithful people in exile. And today too, God's words sustain us as we long for the new creation. The servant's words, as a servant speaks, a bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. Unlike the people of Israel in exile, the servant listens. The servant is good news for a hopeless people because he listens. But there's more to see. Second thing to see, through his listening, the servant will suffer. Have a look at verses 5 and 6. The sovereign Lord has opened my ears. I have not been rebellious. I have not turned away. I offered my back to those who beat me, my cheeks to those who pulled out my beard. I did not hide my face from mocking and spitting. listening leading to suffering? Well, that might sound surprising to us, but just consider the life of God's prophets all the way through the Old Testament. None of them had an easy life. In fact, Stephen in Acts chapter 7 can say this to Israel: was there ever a prophet your ancestors did not persecute? You see, this servant is going to be God's ultimate prophet, the one whom they all pointed to, from Abel to Zechariah. He's going to be listening to God's words, passing them on. And as he does so, he'll publicly submit to God, even through suffering. Now, so far in Isaiah, we don't know why this servant is going to suffer. You might know it's going to come up in three chapters' time. But knowing who this is pointing to, it is striking, isn't it? As we think back to what we saw with Sam in Luke 22 last week. As the servant is beaten, as he is spat on, as he is mocked, Jesus could turn to them and say, "Which of you convicts me of sin?" As those guards mock, spit, beat Jesus. See, the servant listens. And because he listens, he goes through suffering. The servant does what God says and he endures the shame. His meekness here isn't his weakness. But how much greater is this servant than Israel, who are suffering in exile due to their lack of listening? This servant is good news for a hopeless people because he suffers. But there's more. The third thing in this passage is that the servant trusts. He goes through the suffering, but not because he is guilty. Just have a look at verses 7 and 8. "Because the sovereign Lord helps me, I will not be disgraced. Therefore, have I set my face like flint, and I know I will not be put to shame. He who vindicates me is near. Then who will bring charges against me? Let us face each other. Who is my accuser? Let him confront me." You see, the servant knows that he has no guilt. Therefore, he knows he will not be disgraced ultimately. He listens to what God says and goes through with it, knowing that it is God who is in control. Because the sovereign Lord helps me, he can do it. He sets his face like flint. His resolve to get the job done is solid. Again, we see that fulfilled in Luke. Luke uses this exact verse to talk of Jesus in Luke 9. In Luke 9, he says this: "He resolutely set his face like flint, out for Jerusalem." The servant resolutely sets out to do what God has called him to do. And verse 8, he doesn't defend himself. Striking how much stuff's coming up from Luke, isn't it? Even when the accusations were made against him, Jesus didn't answer back, did he? Even when the accusations were coming thick and fast, even when they were demonstrably false, the servant knows he does not need to defend himself. Why? Well, because he who vindicates me is near. Vindication, that's a legal language. But the servant knows the suffering he faces is not because he is guilty. The servant is a better version of Job. The servant is a better version of Israel. The servant is innocent and they trust God. The servant is everything that Israel is not. The servant is good news for a hopeless people because he trusts. And finally, the last bit of the picture we're given, at least this time in this passage about the servant triumphs. Through the suffering, the servant will triumph. Verse 9, "It is the sovereign Lord who helps me. Who will condemn me? They will all wear out like a garment. The moths will eat them up." You see, then no one can condemn the servant. There is no basis for the charges against him. These allegations, they're like a suit stored up in a wardrobe that the moths have got to. That's the picture here. Although thinking about it, I don't think that's something we face nowadays. When was the last time you knew someone whose suit had been eaten by moths? Well, apparently moths do eat suits, and this is the picture. But notice, the allegations, they don't go away overnight. The allegations don't just go in a moment. Yet they will wear out. They will grow old. See, as time works away at the news of the servant's victory, the allegations of lies and subterfuge will disappear. And so the servant, by listening, suffering though innocent, will triumph. He will be glorified because it is the sovereign Lord who helps him. That's amazing news for people who feel hopeless, isn't it? A people who feel like Charlie Brown, who look at themselves, listen to those voices inside their head, and they can't see a way out. Instead, Isaiah says, listen to this servant. Listen to how he is the solution. Realize that your ears are on the outside of your head. So listen to the good news that is outside of yourself. The servant is good news for hopeless people because he will triumph. Well, that was a lot about the servant, but what difference does that make to us? What are God's people to do in light of this? Fortunately, that's where Isaiah wants to take us next. Verses 10 and 11, they make it abundantly obvious. Who among you fears the Lord and obeys the word of his servants? Let the one who walks in the dark and has no light trust in the name of the Lord and rely on their God. But now all of you who light fires and provide yourselves with flaming torches, go. Walk in the light of your fires and of the torches you have set ablaze. This is what you shall receive from my hand. You will lie down in torment. Do you see the application there? Trust in the name of the Lord and rely on God. And what does that look like? Well, it looks like listening to the servant. Do you see that? It's there in verse 10 that it's been revealed that the servant has been speaking. The servant who speaks God's words. So the people are called to listen to this servant. When the servant comes onto the scene, people will be judged as to whether they listen to him. These verses might ring some bells for us. Might sound a bit familiar. People walking in darkness. People having no light. That is language that comes up throughout the Gospels in the New Testament, isn't it? Just think of John chapter 3. John uses this picture. It's not out of nowhere. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but the people loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. I want to put it to you tonight that the gospel writers know Isaiah. We've seen that as we've gone through Isaiah over the past few months, John is saying the same thing. He's using the same picture that's come up here. The world is walking in darkness, not because the sun has gone down and the lights are gone. So God's people, too, are walking in darkness here. The people Isaiah was talking about, they're walking in the darkness of exile. And exile is a picture of being separated from God. But God speaks into the darkness and light appears. Therefore, God has shown how he is going to save. He has spoken those words about how he's going to save. And those words, they come through his servant. So the choice is there. Applies to them then, applies to us now exactly the same. Are you going to rely on God or are you relying on your own abilities? Let's have a look at verse 11. As Isaiah talks of people lighting their own fires, he's talking about creating your own light for the darkness. He's talking about creating your own solution to that darkness. To light fires, to provide flaming torches for yourself, is to turn your back on God's solution and come up with something else. Is to turn from God's solution to idols. It's to say, I don't need God. I can do this on my own. I can sustain myself rather than rely on God's word. It's to say the words of that famous poem you might have heard of called Invictus. Just listen to how similar this sounds to Isaiah, actually. This guy, he came up with it on his own. There he is, William Ernest Henley. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Isaiah chapter 50 is the answer to William Ernest Henley's poem. In fact, if William Ernest Henley had read Isaiah, he might not have written Invictus. What does God say to that statement there on the screen? This is what you shall receive from my hand. You will lie down in torment. To reject the servant, to reject God's rescue plan is to reject God. And the only answer to God's judgment is the servant. To think that you are the captain of your own fate is to dethrone the true captain. And as we see the description of the servant here, we need to realize that he does everything that God's people need. We see here God's solution to the darkness of this world. One day all things will be made new. We'll see the hope God calls us to. But till then, we need to listen to that answer that is outside of ourselves. To realize that our ears are on the outside of our heads for a reason. The Creator did that on purpose. To realize that our ears are on the outside of our heads and listen to the servant outside of us. To not listen to those inner voices in our heads saying we can do it ourselves. Tomorrow morning, when something goes wrong, where are you going to turn? Ultimately, where do we find our salvation? Is it in anything that we do? Or is it like that thief on the cross we saw this morning? All about Jesus. Well, verse 10 should be our verse to take away this week. Why not put it on your phone, put it on your fridge, print it out, whatever's going to help you to remember it. Isaiah 50, verse 10. Who among you fears the Lord and obeys the word of his servant? Let the one who walks in the dark, who has no light, trust in the name of the Lord and rely on their God.
Well, I hope you found some comfort there. Any feedback can be sent to me on podcast@david-couch.com, and I'll see you next time.